FTX, Binance, they've all been offshore. Binance has survived this long. They're probably going to fail at some point in time, whether it's now or 5 years down the road or something. Next time there's a big upturn and a crash or something like that, they're playing with the house of cards. They're just the biggest player.
Hey, this is Matt Cox, and I am here with Brandon Keys from Green Candle Investment. He's got a couple podcasts.
Yeah, a couple podcasts.
Couple podcasts, and we're going to do an interview, and we're going to talk about crypto and I don't know, a bunch of other stuff I have no idea about. And Brandon's going to enlighten me and explain different situations, and some situations I kind of feel like I know about and some I absolutely have no idea. So, all right. So check out the video. First thing I want to get out of the way, so you don't know this because you probably don't watch my channel, is that I have been wanting to paint this wall, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to paint this wall red. Well, dark red like it is. It's actually dark red. It's not just red. It's dark red. It's like crimson or something, right? I don't know. So I've been wanting to paint it forever, and my now wife would not let me because, you know, it's I rent this place. You know, it's work. Yeah. And you know, but I also, it's like, I'm like, okay, well, I'll paint it, you know, when I'm done. Like, it,
You'll paint it back white.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. I'll paint it. Yeah. But so it was back and forth. This has been going on for a year. And so finally the other day, she's like, all right, you can paint it. Because I kept complaining. I just hated the setup that I had changed it and set up. I had some shelves back there, and I didn't like them and the whole thing. So I wanted to put this wall back and this wall and set up the way I used to have it set up in my old apartment. So finally I did that. And so this is the first day. This is the first episode
in
studio with the red wall. And so I want to know if my shirt's messed up. So
just flex a little bit, right? Tighten it up. Get the dryer working, extra schmedium.
So I want. So yeah, I need feedback. So I need feedback. If anybody like, listen, there's no way anybody's gonna not like this wall. This looks good, and it looks great on camera. I mean, you and I see the rest of the junk around here, but on camera, it's gonna look good.
Oh, I think it looks really good.
People are gonna think you're like in a real studio.
Yeah. Legit. I mean, like I said, when I walked in, I was like, damn, this setup's legit, man.
It does appear that way. It's an illusion. It's like, you know, people are like, this guy the other day looked at me and he's like, man, you work out, like you're buff. You're like, listen, bro, this is all for show.
The dryer's working hard, dude. Yeah,
trust me. I'm weak. I barely work out. I go through the motions. So, all right. Are you ready? Are we going? No, I'm just okay. So, all right. So, what are we talking about? Listen, I don't know. By the way, I don't know anything about crypto.
Yeah,
like I'm the minimum.
All right. Well, let's start there then. All right. So let's back it up. Right. So I'm a Bitcoin guy through and through. So Bitcoin only. I have my podcast, State of Bitcoin, all that kind of stuff. There's a big difference between Bitcoin and crypto, and I kind of want to go through the differences with that first, so you can kind of understand like how people have been scamming left and right. So Bitcoin, it got really popular with blockchain, right? Everybody kind of hears blockchain technology, all this and that. Biggest difference with Bitcoin is there's proof of work and proof of stake. So proof of work is what Bitcoin uses, and proof of stake is like a protocol what like Ethereum or some of these other cryptos use. So what proof of work essentially does is every single time there's a transaction, there's a miner that has to run and operate and basically run a mathematical equation to determine, you know, if this is correct. And each time a transaction goes through, it's run through a node as well. And then that miner, once it's kind of going through this whole circulation thing, the miner receives a reward. And what this reward is some Bitcoin, right? So every time you transact back and forth, I send you some Bitcoin, a miner receives there's some sort of network fee, right? So with this, it can be completely decentralized because there's no barrier to entry. You can have a miner, he can have a miner, I can have a miner, somebody in Argentina can have a miner, somebody in China can have a miner. And all of this helps basically run this entire Bitcoin protocol.
So, okay. So if it's actually based on something, which I'm not even positive what you just said, but if it's actually based on something that you're saying is what, semi-stable, then why does it fluctuate?
So it's fluctuating based on the US dollar price, right? So what Bitcoin did, which every other cryptocurrency hasn't been able to do, is create digital scarcity. So basically, you can go through the whole entire code and protocol. It's all open source. You can go and verify this yourself, but there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin ever created. You'd have to basically get every single person that has a node, miner, all that kind of stuff to agree that they want to increase that supply, which basically it's like theoretically impossible, right, to get like millions of people to agree on one thing. Whereas in Ethereum or some of these other cryptos, they use what's called proof of stake. And so they have miners and other things like that, but what this staking does is basically, like, you've heard the staking rewards and other things like that, but essentially the top dogs control that entire market. So I believe you need anywhere from like 100 or 60 Ethereum in order to mine. Whereas like in Bitcoin mining, you don't need anything, right? So you need a certain amount of Ethereum to, a lot. So Ethereum at one point was like $4,000. So one ETH, 4,000 times 60,000 or times 60, you know, that's a big barrier to entry to be able to kind of control that protocol. So essentially Ethereum and all these other ones are not decentralized like a Bitcoin, or, you know, I guess Bitcoin is really the only one that is decentralized. So Ethereum has a lot of these nodes and everything else on AWS. So theoretically, if the SEC or somebody else were to kind of investigate Ethereum, they could go to Amazon and say like, hey, like, quit hosting these nodes on this. And they can essentially shut down Ethereum. So there's a lot of, I guess, single points of failure for a lot of these cryptocurrencies.
But they can't do that with
But they can't do with that Bitcoin. With Bitcoin, right? So we've had China and some other countries try to ban Bitcoin mining, saying it's bad for the environment or something else like that. Whereas...
True? How's that true?
So they say it's true because it uses a lot of power, right? So, you know, you have a MacBook right here. So right. You can't, like, mine Bitcoin off your MacBook anymore because there's so many in circulation, right? It takes a lot of power. I mean, we can go down that rabbit hole if you'd like, but essentially, you know, every 4 years it gets harder to mine Bitcoin because they call what's the halving event. So every 4 years, the amount that can be mined per block is cut in half. And that's just kind of like, I don't know, the logarithmic function that is Bitcoin. So all the Bitcoin won't be fully in circulation until 2132. So it's not going to be a long time, but 90% of it is already in circulation now. So you see like kind of the logarithmic function here. Basically, brass tacks is that Bitcoin cannot be controlled because it is decentralized fully, right? Because there's so many people that can have access to the protocol that have a say, that have no barrier to entry. Whereas every other crypto, there's a CEO, there's a marketing department, there's something along these lines that controls it. Right. You know, there's a kill switch on every other crypto except for Bitcoin.
So it's able to be manipulated by at least one or two people as a result of Bitcoin, which is monitored just by the market in general?
Yes, 1,000%. So, okay. I mean, there could be like market makers, right? There could be whales that essentially, you know, sell a bunch of Bitcoin for a cheaper amount and like kind of manipulate the price that way. But, you know, that happens in the stock market.
Yeah, that happens in everything. It can happen anywhere. Yeah.
You know, so it happens theoretically anywhere, but people just kind of, you know, point to Bitcoin's volatility on that, right? But you got to think, it's volatile to the US dollar because there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin, right? But, you know, gas prices change every day. And if we were to allow probably gas stations or, you know, there was an incident in Venezuela at some point where, you know, if you go to a bar and you get a beer 5 minutes later, whenever you go to the next beer, that beer price is changing. So that's how volatile Venezuela's currency was at one point in time. We have the luxury of living in the United States, so we've never really had to deal with anything like that, right. You know, generally speaking, where you go to the grocery store, you go to a bar, you go to some of these places, go to a gas station during the day. Like, you know, relatively speaking, gas is pretty stable throughout the week, you right. know. So
be like hyperinflation after World War One in Germany or something, right? Like they're just printing so much money, it just becomes it has no value at all.
Exactly. So I mean, that's kind of like lining it out here. That's just basically Bitcoin can't be manipulated, but other cryptocurrencies theoretically can. And so because these other cryptos have essentially have marketing teams, CEOs, all these other things, it's brought in a lot of bad actors, right? So the biggest name that everybody's probably heard of at this point is FTX.
Right.
But there was companies before that failed, right? So there was the first one was probably Celsius Network that kind of, you know, got on, and then it was FTX, and then now there's some other players kind of in the game. But, you know, when it comes down to it, a lot of these exchanges, what they do is they market, you know, some of these other crypto coins, whether it's, you know, Ethereum, AVAX is another bigger one, Solana, some of these other, I guess, bigger cryptocurrencies. These marketing departments pay money to have them go on to, you know, XYZ exchange. And that even includes Coinbase, right? So, I mean, recently we've had, you know, money laundering stuff go on with Coinbase and their kind of CEOs and higher management as well. So I don't know.
Was that the Russian thing that?
Yeah. So essentially what happened was I don't remember the exact position of these guys, but it was like CFO or something like that. It was very high up. Basically, they had the knowledge of Coinbase is about to list whatever crypto in the next wave. So what they would do is they would go on a different exchange that offers this, buy up a bunch of it, and then Coinbase lists this crypto. They market it to their millions of people that are on that, you know, exchange. People buy it up, it inflates the price, then the CFO, whoever, you know, bought a bunch of it, just sells a bunch of it off. So basically just pump and dump.
Yeah, it's a pump and dump.
You know, I mean, it's kind of, you know, key case in point. But, you know, Coinbase has kind of gotten away with that, so to speak, so far. But other exchanges haven't, right? Because there's been, yeah, you know, like I said, you know, FTX and Celsius. So the two big flags that they've had is essentially, you know, they've had their own crypto token. So what you can do, I could do it, you know, anybody could theoretically do it, go and create their own cryptocurrency. Low barrier to entry, you just essentially need to know how to code a little bit. And, you know, with GitHub and like YouTube videos and all this other kind of stuff, like you could probably figure it out in a couple days. But what these companies did was essentially they would offer a bunch of cryptos, offer extremely high yields up to like 18-20% and say like, hey, buy this and you're gonna get back 20% in that crypto.
Are they guaranteeing that, or they're just,
it would be a guaranteed rate.
Oh, and they would pay it out. It seems illegal. Like, yeah, that's like, well, you can't guarantee a rate. Like,
exactly. But they would do that over, you know, a month. You know, Celsius would pay out every week. Some companies would pay out monthly. But theoretically, that would be, you know, almost like paper crypto that would be on your account.
Is that like the crypto queen? That's what she was doing, right? She
did
that over like several years.
Yeah.
Never even had a coin.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's the biggest problem, is that it would be like, you know, you go to your bank account, right? You put in, I don't know, $1,000 in there, you're getting 20% back. But then like when you need that $1,000 after you've gotten 20% for a couple years or whatever it is, you can't pull it out. Right. And that's basically what's happened.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. Is like what they would do is they would say, you know, Celsius Network offers their own crypto. They say, hey, you know, we'll give you 10% on your Bitcoin when you deposit it with us. But if you buy some of our token, we'll give you 15%. So it inflates their own token price, right? Because it gives you an incentive to go and buy their token, right? So people are keep buying up their token, keep buying it up, and they're giving people higher yield on other cryptos. So they're just leaving it in there, right? They're leaving it on these exchanges, Celsius, FTX, and whatever. So what essentially happened was, you know, there was one big player that had a bunch of whatever token it was, like Celsius, the Celsius token, FTX token, and they would go to these banks. A lot of just normal U.S. banks, or not even U.S. banks, a lot of times it was like offshore banks or some, like a lot in the Bahamas, essentially. It's all kind of like linked into this one bank in the Bahamas. But essentially, they would go to this bank in the Bahamas. They say, hey, we have 1 million of this Celsius token that's valued at $10. Just give or take. I'm just tossing out numbers here. But all right, so we have $10 million worth of this crypto, and it keeps going up at this rate. Let's borrow against it. And so they would borrow against it, get real U.S. dollars, and they wouldn't really essentially, you know, the yield that they were offering on these other tokens, they weren't really getting.
Right.
They were claiming they were kind of have this algorithm, they were trading whatever. So they were basically playing just, you know, a house of cards, and they would get a bunch of these crypto tokens, a bunch of yield, and then get it backed by U.S. dollars from a loan. And then, you know, some player would come in with a bunch of one token and then just sell it all off. Then everybody who owned that token would fall out. And then, you know, the bank would come like say, hey, now you need to pay out this loan. And then,
was collateralized by this token that was worth $10 and now is worth $1.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And so now they have no collateral. They lent $5 million on what they thought was worth $7 or $8 million, and it turns out it's not even worth $100,000 at this point. They just lose everything.
Yeah, it was backed on nothing. Right. Like I said, I mean, like I told you, no barrier to entry. You can create one out of thin air and just say like, hey, there's so many tokens. So a lot of these, you know, companies like Celsius, for example, what they did was they would say they were burning tokens to try to make it deflationary. So they would create, I don't know, 20 million tokens, and then they say like, hey, we're burning 5,000 tokens a day, or we're burning like 100 tokens a day. And that would cost them money because like essentially like you can't offer any more of these tokens because they're theoretically making it more scarce. But in the end, you know, it was just all a giant Ponzi scheme where all these people, they're trying to convince people to buy into their token. It gets sold off, and then guess who gets left holding the bag is the retail consumer, because all the big players, you know, they're going to get settled out eventually. So, I mean, essentially that's what happened with, you know, Celsius and FTX, but, you know, there's still some of these companies out there that are doing this same thing that have essentially survived through this first initial wave. So FTX made a lot of waves because obviously, you know, they had FTX Arena in Miami for the Miami Heat. They had Tom Brady. They had a bunch of these big celebrities marketing for them. And, you know, a lot of people just essentially kind of saw the writing on the wall and pulled a bunch of their money off of FTX. So I think they pulled like $4 billion off of FTX within a weekend. And that caused them to halt withdrawals. So if you didn't get it in time, you didn't take your money off at a certain period of time, you know, you were the one kind of like left with your money on FTX that's just theoretically there.
So it's like a run on the bank. So it wasn't. So I mean, I kind of know, like, I forget what was his name, his competitor that you just mentioned the name
Binance.
Binance, the kind of like the head of Binance, kind of started that ball rolling.
Yeah. So these companies, Binance and FTX, started somewhat together. So it's right. like,
and then they broke off.
It's kind of hairy how they broke off, too. It's like CZ is the guy who started Binance. He was the first investor in FTX, and so he bought up a lot of FTX's token. He basically went to them like, hey, like, I think you guys are too leveraged. And like the story is that he sold off a lot of this FTX token, which caused it to crash, they were basically over collateralized at that point. And, you know, because of that, FTX failed.
It was going to fail anyway.
It was going to fail anyway. Exactly. But I mean, the bigger issue too is like, you know, everybody was doing all this and kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like the GameStop kind of like yellowing in, like people just jumping on a trend.
Yeah.
They were doing that, but at a significantly larger scale in a company and using retail consumers' dollars for all this. So in the end, you know, when you go to a Coinbase or one of these other companies and you buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, or whatever, they're supposed to have some sort of like proof of reserves, proof of that they bought that token for you. So if you went there and you wanted to pull it off and go to either another exchange or cold storage or something like that, you could do that. But turns out they weren't even really doing that. So, I mean, CZ and FTX, he was like the first investor into FTX, and they both used the same bank. They both have kind of all been interconnected. And at one point, you know, CZ and Sam Bankman-Fried, who founded FTX, they were working together. And I guess because the The exchanges both got too big. You know, they couldn't be, I guess, seen working together too much because it would be almost like monopoly in the, right. a certain extent. So Sam Bankman-Fried bought out CZ. We don't really know if that actually happened or not, but theoretically that happened. I don't know. There's rumors out there. There's theories that Sam Bankman-Fried really didn't buy out CZ. And because of that, that was why he kind of sold off all of his token and kind of, you know, made it collapse. I don't really know the full extent of all that, but what I do know is that Binance is still doing what FTX and what Celsius did, is that they're giving loans at almost like 0%, where you very low collateral, you just have to give up a certain amount of Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever token you want, and you can borrow against that. They have their own token. They're offering people very high yields.
Right.
But what recently just happened, well, within the past, like, I believe week or so, is that you cannot now put in US dollar transfers into Binance. So whatever, something happened in the background that we don't really know about, that's probably going to come out in the next, I don't know, few months or so, because it's come out that the SEC is now investigating Binance. And so because of that, basically all the banks have said, like, hey, if you want to deposit US dollars into your Binance account, we're not going to allow you to do that anymore. So it's essentially cutting off the on-ramp, because Binance is doing something probably similar to what, you know, FTX and you know, Celsius and some of these other guys were doing. But the interesting part of this is that FTX, Binance, they've all been offshore. They haven't been U.S. companies. Right. And they all have an arm, like it was FTX U.S.
Yeah.
And then now they have Binance U.S. And so now Binance U.S. is cut off, but everywhere else is still able to operate. And, you know, the U.S. seemingly has a little bit more stringent, you know, policies when it comes to this. But when it comes full circle, you know, Binance has survived this long. They're probably going to, you know, fail at some point in time, whether it's now or, you know, 5 years down the road or something. Next time there's a big upturn and a crash or something like that. I mean, you know, it's essentially they're playing with the house of cards. They're just the biggest player at this point. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of sketchy stuff going on behind the scenes that is kind of starting to come to light with a lot of these, you know, crypto scams. And because of that, you know, it's bringing a lot of, I guess, negative light to, you know, Bitcoin, which is theoretically like decentralized and other things like that. So, I don't know. It's all kind of, you know, you've seen FTX and everything kind of topple. So I think that there's going to be definitely more blood in the streets here in the next few years or so, to say the least.
So I have a question. Does the economy going down, you know, or slowing down, or, you know, going into recession or depression or anything, does that affect the, like you're saying, the dollar? But it's like typically, not now so much, but typically, you know, when the dollar gets weak, right? So people start dumping money into gold and other products like that. That's not really happening now for some reason. I forget what they call it, but what the issue is. But I'm wondering, like, I've heard that, well, people dump money into, you know, into Bitcoin and crypto when that happens. But that, I also heard that several years ago. I don't know if that's still what's happening.
Yeah. So, you know, they've essentially thought of it as like an inflation hedge, right? So, you know, it is kind of an interesting time because the dollar has been actually like doing pretty well if you think about it compared to other like fiat currencies. And so what a fiat currency is just like, you know, a state-backed currency that isn't backed by gold or anything else. Right. So, you know, it's doing well compared to the euro. The only one that's really not doing well is, I believe, the ruble or, you know, whatever Russia uses. So, and, you know, that's a whole nother situation in itself. But yeah, I mean, if the economy does bad, you know, I think a big part of it, my biggest theory as to why FTX and a lot of these companies were able to do so well and kind of blow up, get all these marketing dollars, you know, get all these people behind them and kind of inflate these cryptos, is because we've had a low interest rate environment for the past decade.
Right.
So we've had, easy access to capital where people can just go to a bank and say like, hey, you know, I'm doing something on Web3 or, you know, whatever, you know, like these companies went from non-existent and then 3 or 4 years down the road, they're billion-dollar valuations. Like, when does that ever happen?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really make any sense onto how that could even happen. And a lot of these companies just, you know, like I said, it's just they had a bunch of investors and people just throwing money at them. And
the business model alone that you just said, like, hey, if you put money in our company, we'll give you 15%. And then they're lending that money out at 0%. Well, how are you making money? Like, how does that? There's fees and this and that. Bro, what are those fees? Are they more than 15% on every single dollar transaction? Like, it's not that high.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's not even close to that high. And I mean, like, some of these ones, like, you know, I'm not quite sure on Binance, but I know on Celsius, you couldn't buy on there. You would have to buy it on a Coinbase or something and then transfer it onto there. So there wasn't even like a really good on-ramp for Celsius, but people would buy it on, you know, Coinbase or something of the other, which charges a high fee compared to the, you know, the rest of the industry. But, you know, you buy it there and then you can transfer it onto Celsius and then they'll give you, you know, 15%. And that's basically what happened is like all these cryptos promise yield. They say like you can stake, you can do all these other things and you can get 10 to 15% or higher. And the marketing behind it was all these dirty banks are, you know, screwing over the little guys. Oh, yeah. And, you know, they can really offer the entire world 7 or 8%, but they're just not doing it. When in reality, we all know that's not true.
Law enforcement often questions him, not because he's suspected of a crime, but because they find him fascinating. He is the most interesting man in the world.
I don't typically commit crime, but when I do, it's bank fraud. Stay greedy, my friends.
Support the channel. Join Matthew Cox's Patreon.
You know who Chris Marrero is? My buddy who believes in that. Look, did you see his face immediately? It's like, oh my God, this guy. So you know what a sovereign citizen is?
Yeah.
I would love to see you and Chris sit down and talk. Because he'll do a whole, not a skit, because he believes it. He'll do a whole thing on how money doesn't exist, and he does the whole, you know, in 1918, you know, he does a whole thing on you don't have to pay income tax. And this is a guy who got like, God, what did he get, like 15 years or something in prison?
Oh, damn, yeah.
For running a tax scam where he was they convinced people, like, if you've borrowed a mortgage, the banks, what they do is they fractionalize that mortgage. And they go through, he goes through this whole thing. And basically, so they actually owe you money. And you can file a 1001 ID or some tax form.
Oh, damn.
And you file it, and they'll give you money back. And they will. Because basically, if you ask the IRS, if I filed right now and said, hey, you owe me $30,000, and I made this much, and you owe me, like, they'll cut you a check.
Yeah.
You know, now granted, they'll figure it out in 3 months or maybe a year.
They'll audit you at some point.
And then they're going to come back and go, we're going to need our money back.
Yeah.
So, but it's funny because he's insane. Like, he would go nuts and he's so positive about it. And the problem is, you know, you're level headed. So I could see you going, no, Chris, that's not happening. No, listen to this. He'll break out books and stuff. And he just, it's funny because I was talking to him. The other day he called me and was like, hey, listen, I got this guy. And then we got on the phone and the guy equally thinks he's insane.
Yeah.
And so Chris, I started mocking Chris with the guy we were talking to on the phone. And Chris was like, no, that's not what's happening. So we're going back and forth. And all of a sudden I go, you know, what's the funniest thing about, cause this guy mentioned, hey, I actually know a lot of guys that are sovereign citizens, just like Chris, because they all believe everything. They believe in Bigfoot. They believe the pyramids were put here by aliens. Like, they all believe they've melded together every single conspiracy that's out there. So I remember I said, you know, the problem is, Chris, like, you would have more credibility. You and your people would have more credibility. I said, if you weren't renting someone's spare room. Like, I've never met one of these guys who's got like five Lamborghinis,
yeah,
and he's got a 15,000 square foot house that's worth $20 million. Like, they're always on the cusp of figuring out how to break the system and breaking the system, but at that moment they just happen to be sleeping on a park bench.
Yeah,
they happen to be living in their car or someone's spare room. It's like, Chris, I've never met one of you guys that's successful. You know everything. We're all fools. But in the end, you're renting someone's spare room and you're paying your rent with dollars.
Yeah,
So what's happening here? You know, and he starts laughing. He's like, no, you watch. When I file this, I'm like, oh God. When you go back to prison,
yeah.
But I would love to see you sit down and explain this whole thing. Honestly,
you'd probably love it because like a big book in the Bitcoin space is The Sovereign Individual, which I'm sure he's read before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like that's basically the whole premise, right? Is that you don't need a government to control your money because it's like all kind of that protocol. And then, you know, even further than that, it's the Bitcoin space is now, all right. Before, it was the Silk Road, right? Bitcoin was being used to drug deals over the internet because you can't really trace it. You can do it non-KYC, which is know your customer. You can have it like all anonymous, theoretically. Like, it'll just link to one wallet ID. And if you play your cards right, you can basically have this money or medium of exchange without anybody really knowing. And so, you know, it's gone from that to now people are like, well, you know, you need to know where your food is coming from. So you need to go down the road, shake your rancher's hand, go get this beef from this local rancher down the street instead of this processed meat that we buy in Florida that is maybe ranched out in Georgia or in some other state and then shipped in. And then it's gone from there to now, like, you need to work out all the time instead of being just like a lazy shit. And so you just need to kind of like take control of your full life, which is probably what he's, you know, along the lines, but he's probably more like tinfoil.
He's listening. And the worst thing is that he was always talking about aliens, right?
And I used to
have my whole theory about aliens where I'd go, you know, okay, Chris, look, I get it. Like, mathematically, is there life on other planets? Yes. Just crunching the numbers, there's tens of millions of planets out there that have life. The likelihood that they would travel across, you know, the galaxy to come and be interested in us or even pay attention to us is ludicrous. Like we have nothing to offer. And then he was like, no, we have a water. I'm like, water's abundant in the universe.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, you know, we have a planet. If they can travel across the galaxy and travel hundreds of millions of light years and get here, they've solved the problem of energy. They've solved the problem of terraforming. They've solved the problem. Like, they've solved all the problems that we could possibly offer a solution to. It's more like it should maybe I'll give you curiosity.
Yeah,
but that's it.
Yeah, and then like you come to it like, all right, if they know that we have life on this planet, but then there's other planets that they could theoretically like
could terraform it.
Yeah, then why would they want to even risk it?
Right.
You know? I mean, if it causes an uproar or
something. In 1954, there was they, you know,
all those photos are so grainy too, you know? Like, it's all there's an agreement. Black and white, just like
they have an agreement with the world government. I'm like, the world government? Yeah, oh, you still think that there's the United States and there's Europe. Oh, that's not true. He's like, it's a one world government, it's being run by the aliens. It's like, oh my God. No. Anyway, but so I'm sorry, but
no, like, back, you're fine. Yeah.
Sorry, back to it would be hilarious to get them together and just have you guys just talk. He would listen. And the great thing is he'll laugh about it. He doesn't get upset. Like if you buck, like, you know, if you say no, that's not, he won't get angry. He gets excited.
Yeah,
but he's not angry. He won't be like, man, fuck you. He won't do that. He'll just go, no, look, I got a book. I can show you here. Hold on, and he'll get the book, and you're like, you know, what are you doing? Like, he would show me these books on aliens, and I go, bro, that's fiction. And I'd say, that's not true. And he'd go, no, and he'd open it up, and it would say, like, nonfiction. And he'd go, look, it's nonfiction.
Yeah.
It's true. And I'd go, it's printed on Amazon.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You can print anything on it.
Right. You can put a book with no words on it. Call it a business book and they'll print it. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I was going to say, so he sends me stuff all the time. Some of it is, back to what we were talking about before, was like some of it is on crypto and some of it is on like China. And so he definitely would make a great, you ought to interview him.
Yeah, for
like,
sure. Yeah.
Like a live stream, right? Like,
yeah, I could do that. Yeah. I'll have to contact you and get his contact information or something like that.
So comical.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So back on topic, bro. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
What is the end goal of crypto? Because we were talking about this before. We were talking about like the United States, backing some kind of is it a coin or just a currency?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's essentially two schools of thought right now, right? So there's theoretically a Bitcoin standard where everybody gets on Bitcoin, where it's decentralized. It's not run by any government. But as we know, governments don't really give up power too easily. So, what is going on right now is countries like El Salvador and Central African Republic have made Bitcoin legal tender. And what legal tender means is just it's a medium of exchange, which is money, theoretically.
They're in charge of printing?
No. So, obviously they're not in charge of Bitcoin, right? So we've kind of gone
sorry,
over.
I thought you meant crypto in general.
No, I get what you're saying. But, they can, theoretically, you can go to some taco stand in El Salvador or like a beach or, something, buy something using Bitcoin. And so, what's kind of going on right now is that it's either countries are going to that or they're looking into develop CBDCs, which is a central bank digital currency. And so what that does is like, in the United States, for example, right, there's the Federal Reserve and then there's banks, right? And so the Federal Reserve is run by, the government, and then the banks are, allegedly private banks that, obviously they have some issues and other things like that. We've heard Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, they've all kind of had their run-ins with the law. But, these banks are your way to store money and other things like that, your way to access it, credit cards, debit cards, all that kind of stuff, checking, savings account. But what a central bank digital currency would do is essentially eliminate those banks. So then it's a direct line from the government to the person, consumer, the citizen. But then what that does is it allows that government to track whatever that person, citizen, whatever is doing. And so that's already going on in China actually right now, is that China has released a central bank digital currency where theoretically, like, they give you a social credit score then. So,
right. But they're not using that solely, right? They're still printing money.
Yeah. So they're in the process of rolling that out right now, trying to go fully digital. I mean, like, if you kind of think about it right now, the United States dollar as it stands, if you were to try to print the, get physical dollars for all the dollars that are in circulation, I think you could get like 10% of actual physical dollars.
Yeah, right. Because so most of it's electronic. It's just on a computer somewhere, server.
It's just a number, right? So theoretically, like, it's already kind of digital, but what the United States has is that extra step of like a private bank, whereas like the government doesn't have your information. If they wanted to have your information or theoretically freeze a bank account or something, they could do that. We saw that in Canada this past year with the truckers convoy. I don't know if you followed that or anything, but essentially there's a protest in Canada. The government said
they want to get the shot.
Yeah. They're like, if you don't want to get the COVID vaccine or anything like that, you can't work. And then the truckers just, basically protested. And what Trudeau and the government in Canada did said, like, freeze whoever's bank account it is that, that is a part of this trucker's convoy. And they had, cameras and other things like that out there. But the interesting part of all that is that people donated crypto to these truckers to kind of help with the cause, kind of help against the government. Well, 100% of all cryptos were taken except for Bitcoin. And 70% of the Bitcoin that was donated was unable to be confiscated because there's a way you can make Bitcoin like fully anonymous, kind of like I was saying, where it's fully decentralized. So
I thought it all came from like a wallet, like the wallet is still tied to you.
Yes, theoretically, but you can have a, you know, so there's different ways you could do it, right? So whenever you use a miner, right, you could plug in a miner into your wall right now and then there's, you know, send it to a wallet on your phone that doesn't require you to put any information. So I have, you know, a couple wallets. There's like, it's Moon, M-U-U-N. There's like Satoshi's, Wallet of Satoshi. Like there's some of these other products out there where you could receive Bitcoin from, like theoretically like a miner or from somebody else. And you could change that wallet address like a couple times throughout that. So whenever you get that Bitcoin, it's very difficult to be traced back to you. It could be traced back to the wallet, but
you could have met a homeless guy and got his information, opened up the wallet.
Yeah, or you know, you could do that, or you.
What I'm saying.
You could do that with a homeless guy, or you could just like, you know, have the, you know, there's like other mixing services that they offer where it's like, hey, you go on to this mixing service, you say like, hey, I'm going to put in, I don't know, 0.5 Bitcoin in there, and theoretically gets sent around to a couple different people and you get the 0.5 Bitcoin back. So it makes it a harder paper trail to kind of chase back to you. So essentially a lot of this kind of happened throughout the trucker's convoy where, you know, the government was pissed at all these people trying to freeze bank accounts, but it essentially made a big, really good use case for Bitcoin because then, you know, they weren't able to confiscate that.
Right,
Bitcoin.
Right. Just made them seem like even more secure. Like, yeah, hey, I said we were secure, but look, they couldn't do anything to us.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, governments around the globe kind of saw that and observed that, and they're like, okay, like some of them were like, all right, well, maybe we can't stop this Bitcoin thing, so we'll embrace it. So that's what El Salvador did. Central African Republic did that, and some others did that as well. But, you know, some others are now looking into developing CBDCs. So there's a website on there you could even go and look. It's like, I think it's just called CBDC Tracker, where you can go and Google all the countries and see where they're at in this development of creating a CBDC. So, like I kind of mentioned a little bit earlier with China, is like, you know, with that comes full government control. So, you could put your tinfoil hat on and say, like, you know, this is Big Brother kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, it really depends on the government who's running it, right? So, I mean, China is, you know, communist. So they essentially have a social score for each person. So, you know, whether you condone these things or not, if you gamble, if you watch porn, buy porn, or you even if you play video games too late, or maybe, you know, we have a similar situation to COVID where it's like, hey, you tested positive for COVID, you need to lock down for 2 weeks, they could just freeze your money. Easily, they don't have to go through the bank and do all that.
Xi Jinping wouldn't do that. Xi Jinping cares about his people. He just wants the best for him.
Yeah, you don't exactly wanna, right.
Your problem is you don't understand tough love. That's the problem.
That's
really
it, yeah.
That's what it is.
No, 100%. That's what it is.
He just doesn't want people. You know, like you shouldn't be watching that stuff on TV anyway or on your phone. You shouldn't be going to Pornhub or whatever these guys do. They shouldn't be doing that anyway. He just wants the best for them.
Yeah. He's just like trying to help you not poison your mind and all that. You know, I mean, that's basically it. Yeah. But I mean, you know, back to that, it's a big reason why China banned Bitcoin mining. At one point in time, they were the leading country of Bitcoin mining hash rate. So what the hash rate is just, you know, however many miners are in one location because of, you know, internet and other things like that. You can kind of track where these miners are like located. You know, obviously you can use a VPN and be in other places, but, you know, theoretically you can kind of tell where the hash is coming from. And China was the biggest player at one point in time. And then, you know, they went and banned Bitcoin mining. There was videos going around on the internet of like those big, what is it? Those big like cement trucks just like running over Bitcoin miners, like just banning all these different things. And, you know,
they just go into people's houses and just grab them.
Yeah. And I mean, there was companies out there that obviously, you know, had a big farm and everything. So you couldn't really hide those. But, you know, at one point in time, yeah, the biggest threat was somebody kind of, you know, stopping Bitcoin mining, and people didn't really know how that would turn out. But, you know, after China banned it, people either went to different countries with it. You know, Kazakhstan was a big one. The U.S. was a big one. Obviously, people came here, got cheap energy. But actually, like a lot of miners kind of went back online in China. So you know, in the end, like, a lot moved, but some definitely stayed and stayed in China and are still mining and other things like that. So, I mean, as much as, you know, some governments are going to try to stop Bitcoin, it, you know, it's theoretically like almost impossible to stop at this point. You know, it's like, I don't know. It would be like you need to go to every single person's house in, you know, the greater, you know, in the globe, go check for Bitcoin nodes, go check everybody's phone, delete all this stuff, shut down the internet. That's theoretically. And if you shut down the internet, we're having probably bigger issues than what's the money. Yeah. So
what do you think? So you think ultimately, but you were saying like ultimately what you think that it, you think all the governments will eventually embrace some kind of a nationalized currency for each country?
Well, so I think there's kind of two ways this can play, or maybe three ways that this could play out. So right now the U.S. dollar is like the global reserve currency, right? So the like we kind of stated a little earlier, the dollar compared to other fiat currencies has been getting stronger because the U.S., the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates, which makes it harder access to dollars. Our biggest export is dollars, is the U.S. So countries getting fewer of those, obviously, you know, it makes the dollar a little bit stronger, a little bit more scarce, yada, yada, yada. But what the U.S. could do, which, you know, I've talked about a little bit on my podcast and other things like that, is they could theoretically back Bitcoin or back the U.S. dollar with Bitcoin. So instead of, you know, a gold standard like we had at one point in time, you know, we have like a Bitcoin standard where, you know, you could theoretically back the U.S. dollar if they wanted to have, you know, the ability to still print more money and put more money in circulation, other things like that. That would essentially allow the U.S. to weaponize the U.S. dollar against any other currency and would keep U.S. as the global reserve power.
Because right now China is trying to China and South America and
China, Russia, like, you know,
what's the name of the currency they're trying to come up with?
Where in the central bank digital currency?
No, I'm saying China's trying to get them to move off of the U.S. currency.
Yeah, so there's already been kind of some movements away from it. So it's, you know, it's called the BRICS nation. So right. Like China, Russia, Iran, some of these other like Middle Eastern countries have like already approved to do trades with oil, not using the U.S. dollar. They've right. actually approved trade in cryptocurrency, whether they use Bitcoin or something else. I don't really know, but you know, it is kind of interesting, right? So, I mean, we have the kind of like this geopolitical war going on with, you know, Russia and Ukraine, and during all this, Putin has seemingly like kind of embraced Bitcoin mining, trying to get a lot of people to come there and kind of embrace that to maybe move away from the U.S. dollar. So there is kind of some stuff kind of going on behind the scenes. But, you know, back to your original question on the three ways I see it playing out. So first way, the U.S. dollar could be backed by Bitcoin. Second way, we used Bitcoin as a standard where I transact things. It's everything is priced in, you know, fractions of a Bitcoin sort of thing, which we call sats. So, you know, there's 100 million sats in every Bitcoin, and then there's 21 million Bitcoins. So, you know, it is divisible, but there's a whole lot of it out there. So theoretically, we could price everything in sats. Or the last way that I see it playing out is that, you know, all these governments try to, you know, revolt. They delete on-ramps. So, like, we're kind of seeing where you can't, you know, use your bank account to go to any of the exchanges like a Binance or like something else to buy Bitcoin. It makes it more difficult. And then they offer people CBDCs. And so because it's easier to use, people would say, you know, I don't really care about my privacy. You know, the government is not going to control my money like that, you know, and then something's going to break out like a COVID where they try to control you a little bit more and then people start freaking out. So, you know, it's either U.S. dollar backed by Bitcoin standard, or, you know, the central bank digital currencies, which essentially is the government controlling your money.
Okay.
So, I mean,
I wonder which one do you think? What do you think is the most reasonable?
So, I mean, I would prefer the U.S. to back the dollar by Bitcoin, but I just think the people in power are just kind of too, you know, I guess, ignorant to what is going on. I mean, we're seeing, you know, a lot of countries move away from the U.S. dollar. We mentioned already oil, right? We El Salvador, I've mentioned a couple times, made Bitcoin legal tender. Well, I mean, we had, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris come out and say, you know, things about El Salvador. And it's like, how many times has a vice president or anybody in the government gave any notice to what El Salvador is doing? The answer is probably never. And the reason why they're upset that they're trying to move towards a Bitcoin standard is because the way that the U.S. dollar being back, or the U.S. dollar being the global reserve currency, kind of helps the U.S. is that theoretically, as they print more money and inject liquidity, whether it's you know, some sort of financial crisis where they're giving people stimulus checks like we saw a couple years ago,
right,
that's essentially devaluing the U.S. currency. But El Salvador doesn't get any of that in stimulus. They don't get any of those PPP loans or anything like that, but they just suffer from the inflationary aspects of the U.S. dollar printing 60% of its money supply in 2 years. So I think more of these countries that are, you know, we're already kind of seeing it. We're seeing a lot of South America, Latin American countries get onto a Bitcoin standard. I think a lot of countries in Africa are going to start to get onto a Bitcoin standard. And so I think the way that I see this playing out is a lot of countries are going to start to move that way, and either the U.S. is going to panic and do what I said, last ditch effort, make it a, you know, a U.S. dollar backed by Bitcoin, or, you know, we're just going to kind of move towards a Bitcoin standard. And, you know, you can't make a Bitcoin illegal in the U.S. because it's another country's money. So, you know, are you going to not allow us to come into the U.S. and pay with something or exchange, you know, pesos for the U.S. dollar?
Right.
It doesn't really make any sense. So, you know, within the past year, we've had, well, I think, yeah, El Salvador has been a little bit over a year now where it's been legal tender. We've had, you know, just recent announcements where remittance payments can be paid in Bitcoin from, you know, the U.S. to Africa, the U.S. to Latin America. And, you know, take for that what it is, right? A remittance payment is somebody living in the U.S. paying some money.
Sending money back, right?
Sending money back to their family. So now they have the ability to do that in Bitcoin, or what's called the Lightning Network. And so what that does is essentially like kills like Western Union's business model, where you can theoretically send, I could send you $5 from you to El Salvador or something,
right,
you to somewhere in Africa. Whereas like Western Union, it wouldn't really make too much sense to send $5.
Because there's a fee.
Because the fee is like $35 or whatever,
right,
it is. So, you know, they're essentially eliminating that, where the fee on that $5 is nothing, like actually nothing. And then once it gets over like $100 or something, it's like a couple cents. So the fee to do it over the Bitcoin network is extremely cheap, and it's extremely fast, right? So, I mean, if you need money on a Saturday or Sunday, Western Union's closed, but, you know, Bitcoin doesn't sleep, right? I mean, so it's all on the internet and other things like that. So, I mean, it's already kind of starting.
Right.
So, you know, I think that we're going to kind of get that way. But the problem is that the companies or the countries that are adopting this, they're third world countries. There's no really other way to word that like nicely. So
developing countries.
Yeah. Maybe
there is.
There we go. I mean, hey, wordsmith over here. But I mean, these developing countries, right? I mean, you know, they're not going to turn around within a year or 2 years. It's going to take a lot of time for them to, you know, get to where the U.S. theoretically is right now. So, you know, the U.S. kind of has some room to make some mistakes. And so, you know, how many mistakes they make, how drastic of a mistakes they make, that's all going to affect how, you know, this all really plays out. And it all really relies on the U.S. dollar and, you know, the government's ability to, you know, kind of, I guess, control that power and keep that power. And I think, you know, a big part of that now is kind of coming to light when it comes to the Russia-Ukraine war, right? I mean, why is the U.S. sending so much money over to help aid Ukraine? So, I mean, I think it's all kind of connected, and it's all kind of a power struggle at the end of the day. And, you know, the crypto Bitcoin industry is one kind of cog that could, you know, theoretically take some power away from people who have been in power for a very long time.
He's been known to cure insecurity just with his laugh. His organ donation card lists his charisma. His smile is so contagious. Vaccines have been created for it. He is the most interesting man in the world.
I don't typically commit crime, but when I do,
it's bank fraud. Stay greedy, my friends.
Support the channel. Join Matthew Cox's Patreon.
I understand the basic concepts. I mean, obviously, I don't know how to get 15 servers and start myself a little, you know, Bitcoin mining, you know, a service or farm or whatever. So, but I mean, I understand the basic concept, but I understand that it's backed by something. You know, you can try and explain that again, but since I'm not able to go back to school, back in time and get a degree in mathematics or computer science or whatever it is that I would need to understand what you're saying, or you could sit down with me for a week or two and try to go over it. But bottom line is, it's backed by something that's virtually impossible to reproduce. And therefore, there's only a certain number of Bitcoins that are going to be released, and therefore they have value because it's limited, and they're able to fractionalize it, and you're able to buy in, and you're able to, and it's accessible to everybody. So, you know, and so it makes it less and less likely that it's able to be controlled by any one person or even a small group of people. Not that there's not the ability to manipulate anything.
Yeah.
But you know, and I understand the difference between that and just basic crypto. Like, until a couple months ago, I just assumed, well, Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency just like all other cryptocurrencies. And I thought the only difference was that Bitcoin was the first one. That's the only difference I ever thought there was. I thought it's just like Ethereum or anything else. I, of course, you know, now.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even cut yourself too much beat yourself up too much about that, because I think that's what majority of people think,
right?
Is that crypto and Bitcoin are all kind of one, right?
The only reason I even know that is because I was looking into the FTX thing, and when they were talking about just producing, they were producing, you know, more and more of their own coins, and I was like, well, how is this even possible? Like, I thought there was only so many of them, and they're like, no, bro, you're thinking. So I had to have that explained, and then I had to look up a video that explained it, and then I was like, still didn't quite understand. You explained it better than the video did, that's for sure.
I appreciate that.
So my head just jumped to China and them locking people down, and yeah, because I can imagine that, and I totally get that too. Like, I was watching Joe Rogan, and where he was saying, I forget who was talking to, but they were saying the same thing. Like, look, you know, they can easily just say, okay, look, you can only spend this much on meat. Mm-hmm. You can only spend this much on vegetables, on your car payment, on gas, on electric. Like, you know, just because, well, it's in limited supply, so we're only allowing people to spend this much on their electric bill. It's like, whoa, what are you talking about? So, so it did. It seemed like to me a scary concept, but there's so many scary concepts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it is that thing, right? I mean, I think the biggest portion of Bitcoin that kind of gets overlooked is that, you know, like what I said a little bit earlier, is that there's no CEO, there's no marketing department, right? So the guy that created it, they don't know if it's guy, girl, group, whatever. It's some coder that was on the dark web.
Japanese guy. I thought it was.
It was by the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto.
Right. I thought that was a real person.
So they don't even know who this is.
Now he's mystical.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that.
I thought it was a real guy. I always pictured him with one of those long mustaches, white mustaches, and a, you know, like a thing, you know.
Nobody knows who he is. I mean, hey, you could be him, we don't even know.
I promise you I know I'm kidding
but you know, I think that's like a part that gets overlooked, right? So I mean, what he did is to, like, another way to prove this is that he put a bunch of Bitcoin in cold storage. I can't remember the exact number. I want to say it's like 1,000 or maybe even a little bit more. And he put that in cold storage, and you can track this all on the blockchain. So, you know, what a blockchain is, just essentially digital ledger.
Right.
So you can see when coins move, when people move a big bunch of things. I mean, there's like Twitter accounts that literally just go and track this, like whale alerts or whatever like that, where they see big amounts of Bitcoin moving back and forth. And this one wallet that has, like, I think it's like 1,000 Bitcoin, maybe even more, hasn't moved since like 2009, when it started in like 2008. So, I mean, I don't know about you, but if I had something that was worth like over a couple billions of dollars just sitting there, and I knew everything about this, and, you know, it got to this point, I'd probably take a couple, I'd take a billion out.
Every few months, somebody's going under.
Yeah. Hey, so, man, I call my shot. I think Binance is going to fail. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe I could come do revisionist history and we could dive in under the hood or something like that.
Yeah, well, you could also explain what's so great about, you know, like getting out now, like when Bernie Madoff's whole thing, you know, you kind of, when it failed, right? Like you're kind of watching it happen on TV, right? So, but now everything's happening like with FTX, like this guy's going on, he's tweeting, he's going on all these programs, he's doing all this. It was like, oh my God, like you're destroying your own case, like live, like what are you doing? Like he doesn't know a world where you can't manipulate media. So he's, I'm sure his attorney's advice. He's going on media platforms and doing interviews and everything, thinking I can spin this. But the problem is, you know, when you watch those videos, you realize like, oh, you're used to being the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
Like you think everybody's an idiot. So when these guys are asking pointed questions and you're trying to spin it. And then they're like, yeah, I understand. But back to the actual question, you're saying that he's doing his whole little stuttering thing that where he's trying to spin it and he can't.
Yeah.
So I'm saying these things are going under all the time. So there's always some little Ponzi scheme or some little, you know, I almost said Queen of the South, crypto queen scam or something that there's, so we could definitely, you could definitely come back on and we could do that.
Well, I mean, what I always say, you know, especially in this crypto industry, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? So, I mean, the word con man comes from confidence because, right. I mean, Sam Bankman-Fried basically had confidence. People, you know, saw the nerdy guy and kind of believed and bought into that. Well, I mean, the same thing's kind of happening with Binance right now,
right?
I mean, like there's been people kind of digging into that, people, you know, kind of digging in some stuff. Obviously, the U.S. stopped allowing you to transfer stuff into that. And, you know, what did CZ do? He went on to CNBC shortly thereafter and spewed his bullshit about like how, you know, oh, don't worry, everything's fine, we're going to figure it out. But, you know, like I said, I think the biggest fault of FTX is Sam Bankman-Fried just isn't, you know, like you said, he's very nervous. And like after he kind of figured out like, oh shit, like the jig is up, he doesn't have that cold-blooded guy in him to go and still lie to all these people, and then all these people pointing him these, you know, pointed questions, and he wasn't able to answer it. Well, I think CZ is a really smart guy, and I also think he's a con man. I think he's out there and just, you know, just trying to instill confidence into people, say like, hey, don't worry, don't do a bank run, don't pull all your money off of Binance, because like, you know, we're fine,
right?
Why are you gonna pull your money off? We're still able to give you this yield. We're perfectly fine. And so they're
I have a working model here.
Yeah,
I you guys put money in, I give you 15%, and I lend that money out at 1%.
Yeah.
That's never going to fail.
Exactly, right? I'm
not a mathematician.
Yeah.
But I mean, count.
Yeah. I mean, you got to ask yourself, where the hell does this yield come from? And nobody can ever answer that question. And then when you ask some of these, you know, crypto bros who go like, oh, you know, I believe in XYZ protocol, XYZ coin, because it offers this yield, you ask them like, well, it's like a company dividend. It's like, well, a company makes money. Like,
right.
You know, yeah, like yeah. a company well, yeah, has a product or a service.
Yeah, you're not making cars.
Yeah.
You're not Tesla. You know what I'm saying?
You're not like a REIT, or you're not like one of these things where you're obviously seeing the cash flow come in. It's all built on a Ponzi scheme.
Right.
And you're just the idiot that's fallen for it.
I was going to say, at least with Tesla, at least Elon Musk will tell you, yeah, the stock's way over. It's way too pricey. I don't know why people are paying. They keep buying it. Like,
yeah.
It's like, I believe this guy.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you're right. You guys really, it's crazy. Like, yeah, but these like guys are like, no, it's definitely worth it. Keep buying. Well, of course, your whole model is based on keep buying it. So, okay, well, listen, I mean, so you've got your channel.
Yeah.
We already talked about your channel. We already talked about, well, not here. We talked about it when we met at PodFest. Because we met at PodFest.
Yeah.
And
shout out PodFest.
Yeah. And Chris K. Did you ever meet Chris, the guy that runs it?
Yeah. I met him a couple times. So I met him. Actually, I got the first exposure to PodFest because I started doing this a little over like 2.5 years ago now. Not so much like YouTube content and other things, but I started like Green Candle, and they had a blockchain and Bitcoin summit in Amalie Arena, which was shared with PodFest. I think it was like late 2020, I want to say. Maybe 2021-ish time. So I went there and I saw PodFest and I talked to Chris a little bit then. And then I went to there's like a podcasters meetup here in Tampa. So I've gone there a couple times. I met him through there. And then, you know, a couple people from there were just like, yeah, we're going to this PodFest thing. And I'm like, all right, I'll check it out, see what it's all about. So went there for a couple of days, met, you know, yourself and a few others. So, I mean, it was an awesome time. And yeah, all in sunny Orlando.
Right? Yeah. It was good. I did a talk there. Did I ever tell you how the talk went?
No, you never told me.
He fucking starts laughing. I did a little talk or speech, whatever you want to take, 30 minutes, right? And then I also did, I was on a panel. So the talk I gave, I went behind a girl. What was her name? Do you remember her name? God, what was her name?
Oh, is he there too?
Yeah. Yeah, Connor's always, not with me. It's just we tend to go to the same places and he shows up and I'm like, Connor, what are you doing? He's like, hey, what's going on? let's call her name Rio. She had a weird name. Let's say Rio. Yeah. So this chick, so I go in to the room and I'm like, wow, like there's like a lot of people. There's like 100. Was there like 100 people maybe? You think more? Maybe.
Okay, full house.
You're no help. There's 100, 150 people. Like there's it's packed.
Yeah.
I was like, this is great. So this is okay, cool. Like I was a little bit nervous because typically all I ever do when I do speeches, I just tell my story. I tell a 45-minute version, then people get to ask, and typically it's finance people. So, you know, I get the basic same questions, no big deal. But this I was talking about basically like what the do's and don'ts of owning or of running a channel.
Yeah.
So I was a little nervous because I've never done that before. So, but I was like, okay, God, you know. But I was more nervous about there being nobody.
Yeah.
So, but I was like, oh, there's like 150 people here. So she gets up and this chick starts talking and she has probably given her speech 10,000 times. Like she was so polished.
Oh, yeah.
And the more she talked, the more I thought, Jesus, God almighty, like of all the people for me to follow up, this is bad. Like this chick, I'm going to have to start off my thing saying like, listen.
She's legit.
If you're thinking that you're about to get as polished of a speech as what Rio just gave, you're going to be disappointed.
In the wrong place.
Like I'm already preparing my apology before I even need to. Yeah. So she gets up, she's like this and this and this, and she goes through all, and she is polished, and she's got all these little tricks she's telling them, and boom, 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 goes through the whole thing. She also periodically drips little things about how she teaches courses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but not bad. Not like you could tell like this was more of a speech, and I think she was told not to do that. Like you're not here to pitch your product.
Yeah,
you're here to give a talk. So, but she does a little here, a little there, and she does the whole thing. And I could tell, and I was thinking, I don't think she's supposed to say that. Like,
yeah.
but I was like, it's fine, you know, whatever. Like, what do I care? She's going on and on and on. She's got everybody really jacked up. Like, wow, like she really knows what she's talking about. You can make a ton of money just doing what she's telling you. She's telling you all these little tricks, and basically, most of it was based on like Twitter and Reddit and formats that I'm not on.
Yeah.
So she gets all pumped up and everything, and she's like, okay, well, look, I'm running out of time. I'm wrapping it up. Boom, boom, boom. You know, it's all, you know, this is it. So look, she said, I know you guys have more questions because people were asking questions. They had their hands raised. She's like, I'm sorry, I can only get to so many. I'm sorry. She said, look, here's what I'll do. Obviously, I also teach a course. You know, if you're interested in the course or if you're interested, honestly, in just me answering the rest of your questions, I'll be in the hallway.
Oh, man.
So come on out to the hallway. Anybody that's interested. And she gets up. And
everybody gets out.
Almost everybody gets up and leaves.
Damn.
And I'm sitting there. I joke around. I'm like, there were 3 people left. But really, there was maybe 20 people left. But I was just like, I mean, listen, it was an emotion. For me, it was, I was like.
Yeah, hit to the ego.
I was up and down, up and down. So then I got up. And, you know, in a way, I was just like. In a way, you did me a favor because I wasn't going to be able to follow that act up.
Yeah.
You know, there was no way. And, you know, so in a way, great. I only have to disappoint 20 people. So I got up. I talked. I rambled for, you know, 20, 25 minutes and I was done. And it was like, oh, you were good. You were a little nervous. You could tell you were. So I did. It's fine. But yeah, it was like when she got up and I mean, they were whoom, and left. I was like, huh? I mean, literally, I kind of just started laughing. I was like, oh, my God.
Damn.
This is hilarious. This is really, I mean, I don't really care because, you know, there was a good chance I was going to get, you know, stoned by these guys. But anyway, so yeah, that was my podcast experience. So I won't be doing that again. But it, listen, what we got to do is, well, one, you have a channel, you have a YouTube channel, right? You have a regular, you have a channel on what? What's the main one on?
Yeah, so both of it's on, so I have one channel, it's Green Candle on YouTube. I got two podcasts. One's called the Macro Insights Podcast and the other's State of Bitcoin. Those are available obviously on my YouTube, but then anywhere you get audio podcasts
right,
as
so
well.
Right, so you rip the audio and you put them on.
Yeah, it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all that kind of stuff.
What do you use to upload them? Do you go to like Anchor?
Yeah, I use Anchor to upload. I use StreamYard to record just like you. And then I rip the audio and the video. I live stream. So I live stream the State of Bitcoin one. I do that one every Thursday.
Okay.
Varies the time because I have a guest, but I live stream it on my YouTube and my Twitter's accounts. So my personal and my Green Candle Twitter account. So
thank you, Brandon, for coming on. I appreciate you guys watching the video. See ya.